This is the eHealth Radio Network, your source for health advice on demand. And now your host, Eric Michaels.
Thanks for joining us once again here on the eHealth Radio Network. This is your host, Eric Michaels. eHealth Radio gives you the most current health information, news, and advice, featuring some of the leading innovators in healthcare and wellness who are changing healthcare as we know it. For more eHealth Radio reports, we invite you to visit our main radio channel site at eHealthRadioNetwork.com. Today, we're speaking with Savitri Prasad, a writer who tackles issues we face in the global community. She is the founder of Firewater Media Group and Green Solutions Magazine. Her new book is What is Coronavirus? How it Infects, How it Spreads, and How to Stay Safe. And Savitri, thanks for joining us here today.
Thank you for having me, Eric. It's a pleasure. I'm glad to be here.
And we certainly appreciate your efforts and also for joining us here today. Looking forward to being well informed. So for starters, what actually led you to realize this book was needed?
Sure, that's a great question. Thanks for that. Well, I started to write this book mainly because it was, you know, a huge influx of media onset onto the scene when this pandemic had been declared by the WHO as a major public health concern. And so when I started to get a little bit understanding on the news and all the media outlets about what this was, what the impact was, and what it meant for everyday life, I thought to myself, I needed to get a little bit more understanding about, you know, this virus. We didn't know what it was at the time. We were still waiting on scientists. And what the news provided was bits and pieces here and there. And so I wanted to fill in those gaps in order to be able to understand the full picture of what this virus was all about. So that kind of led me to starting to do some research, read the research papers that were coming out in different virology journals. And once I started reading those, I realized that this information was too complex for the average everyday person to really understand it. So I took the time to try to siphon that information into a more digestible form so that I may be able to understand it more clearly and be able to explain it to those around me more clearly. Eventually, once I started to get that clarity and people around me started to understand on a better, more visual level as we talked about it, this book came about. And eventually, I thought it could be helpful to other people as well.
And once again, we really do appreciate the efforts in writing this book. It is much appreciated. Now, tell us, did anything surprise you during all the process here?
You know, during the process, yeah, this was a pretty, you know, at the time when I started it, it was all really that wave of energy and that wave of excitement, that wave of, you know, wanting to understand. And as I, you know, continued writing, it was kind of funny, but it began to be sort of this huge daunting task. And and the reason why that it started to become daunting, because obviously everyone was learning about this virus at the same time. You know, scientists didn't know anything about it. This was a novel coronavirus, new coronavirus, and they needed to really do some really deep tests in the research labs about it. So that took time to come out. And so you would get, you know, pieces of information dripping, you know, on one news station, or, you know, releasing on another news station, or you'd have to wait a week or two, or even, you know, a few months to really understand the full impact of something. So I think that for me was one of the biggest challenges, was to wait for the information to come out, because we were just getting everything in real time. You know, not only that, but and then having to understand the complexity of what you were getting. You got it in pieces, bits and pieces. So you didn't get, it was almost like a puzzle at first, and you didn't get all the pieces, and you're trying to find a piece that's critical, you know, to finishing a section of your manuscript. And eventually, when you find that piece, then the other daunting task was then having to try to organize it all together. So there were, I would say, you know, quite a number of things that challenged me throughout the writing of this book.
Now, Sabatier, even taking that further, you spent the last 16 to 17 months researching and writing, and that certainly is a lot of effort, as we had mentioned. Now, what were the challenges that you faced through the process during those 16 to 17 months?
Sure, yeah. As I mentioned, there were a lot of really new research. That was one thing. Another thing that really kind of had me really trying to decipher, you know, good from the bad, was the misinformation and the disinformation. So whenever you have any kind of big news like this, there will always be, you know, good news coming out and factual news coming out, but then there are always a counter to that, which is the misinformation or the misinterpretation of some information. Sometimes that can be just a simple misunderstanding of someone being able to communicate it differently than it was intended, or even disinformation, which is a more intentional form of trying to sway the public into a different direction than what the facts actually are saying. Another challenge I had was organizing that data, as I mentioned. Organizing the data was, at first, when I wrote this book, it started in bits and pieces, really, and trying to get things in a logical, orderly manner that the public can follow and understand was a little bit challenging, and that didn't happen until 6 months into the process. Then, you know, it's almost as if after 6 months, the book took on a life of its own and started writing itself as, you know, sections moved around, you know, from different parts of the book, from the front to the back to the front, the middle. It all came together after a while. And then when I started to consult with some virologists, that helped in the process as well. In order for them to be able to give me, you know, some understanding of the virology world and how the virology world as was understood by virologists in general. So the challenges there was, and even just trying to find the virologists who were available to help me with this book was a bit of a challenge in itself. Everyone, as we know, all the virologists were really preoccupied with trying to understand and research the virus. So it took me a while to find someone to help vet the content of the book and give me confidence that the research that I've been pulling and all of the material that I've compiled together was, in fact, the factual information that people will feel confident reading.
Again, we certainly appreciate your taking a moment to be with us here today and to introduce this book, What is Coronavirus? Today, we're speaking with Sabatier Persad, the founder of Firewater Media Group and Green Solutions Magazine. She's also the author of her new book, as we've mentioned, What is Coronavirus? How it infects, how it spreads, and how to stay safe. And she's joined us here today on eHealth Radio's Coronavirus Information and Health News Channels, a part of the eHealth Radio Network. Now, continuing on, Sabatier, now your book, What is Coronavirus?, touches upon the basics of viruses, coronaviruses, and SARS-CoV-2, among other interesting concepts like past pandemics and vaccines as well. Considering what you've seen so far, how does the new coronavirus outbreak compare to other infectious disease outbreaks in transmission, scope, or public perception?
Sure. So, when we talk about past pandemics, we talk about things like smallpox or HIV and the other types of infections like the 1918 flu pandemic, which I think a lot of people have learned learned a lot about since the pandemic started, and because it's the go-to comparison. So if I were to compare, these pandemics, I would start with the first part and saying that when the pandemic happens, you're dealing with it in different time periods. And during the time period, for example, in previous pandemics, in the early 1800s, 1900s, technology was a lot less prevalent. We had some breakthroughs, and for example, with the 1918 flu, we had very little to work on. And in terms of what caused the actual pandemic, people were still unaware to some degree, and the effects of what was happening. But we've come a long way with science, and science has been very, very helpful in terms of really identifying pathogens and what we are facing. And today, although we have still a lot more to learn, today's science can go really deep down. For example, we know today that our common flu is basically an endemic in our society. It's less transmissible, it's less severe. People have learned to live with it. And we kind of, some of us take our children, take our families every year and go ourselves to get the flu vaccine every year, which, has to change as the virus changes. With the advent of other types of viruses like SARS-CoV, which is the first SARS that was detected in 2003, basically found to be from civet cats, that was a little bit more infectious. It's highly infectious, which is approximately a fatality rate of 9.6%. And then we had MERS, which is similar. It's a coronavirus. It's similar, but came from camel. And that was a little bit more contagious, which was about 34.3%. But today we have SARS-2, COVID-2, which is a little less severe, at about 1.38 to 3.4% in fatality rates, but its transmissibility is much, much higher. So that means it causes more of a public health risk. So whereas SARS-CoV-1 and MERS-CoV, those viruses were controlled, and one disappeared without a trace, without any intervention, much intervention from public, and then the other one was eventually closed off and really stopped, and then died out, or at least disappeared. But we never know if something like those will happen again, because there has been no vaccine to really treat those previous two. We do have vaccines for the current SARS-CoV-2, and we see how that is, faring with the public perception. There's, a tug of war between various beliefs and various camps in terms of, public health measures and what to do and what not to do. So I think the difference is there is that in the past, sometimes we just did. And with past pandemics, some of those pandemics did end with a lot of those public health measures and things like a vaccine. But today, it seems like we're more knowledgeable, yet we're still having, more conflicts over the actual treatment or public health measures for today's virus.
Yeah, certainly a lot to look at there, but I got to tell you, it's really good to look at what's going on now and compare it to the past. I think it would certainly be of good information and most helpful as well. Now, why do you think this virus has inspired such a media frenzy and such widespread fear? What's your thought on that?
So wide media frenzy, I think people in general just have concerns over what this virus can do to their daily lives. We have stay-at-home orders. We have where everyone generally for an entire year, people had to remain indoors, and being indoors meant that depending on your quarters, you're living in a small environment with more people. Whereas if we were going to work gave us an opportunity to do something outdoors with other people and interact with other people. Being at home, everyone kind of had to be isolated, and that media frenzy, with the media trying to get the latest and greatest information about the virus so that it can share with the public, so that the public will have a better understanding. On the other side of the camp, we had different viewpoints, as I mentioned, from different different groups. We have some people concerned with economic uncertainty. We have some groups worried about a recession or a depression. Then we had some groups concerned about shutdowns, masks, social distancing. There were uncertainties about social distancing. So the media frenzy, I think, really perpetuated some of the smaller discussions and dialogues that were going on, some to a good extent, some to not so good extent. And I think that kind of, eventually heightened the public threat that this virus had. For example, when we first started getting word about the symptoms that this virus caused, it affected the respiratory system, and then we started to understand that people were having shortness of breath, loss of sense of smell, headaches, different symptoms that really impacted their physical life and their ability to do things. Walking from one distance to the next in a matter of 5 or 10 steps, and there were shortness and out of breath. And then going to the hospital and having to be out of oxygen and, being on oxygen tanks and not knowing whether or not the oxygen tanks were causing, even worse harm to someone because of the dependency on the oxygen. So the news and all of that information without context started to heighten people's anxiety and stress and led to, a mixed overall understanding of the virus. Simply because most of us, if not all of us, had no experience with a pandemic before. Very few have lived through the 1918 pandemic, but that knowledge and that understanding hadn't been ingrained in society. So having that lack of understanding of what a pandemic is and how to handle the society and cultures within a pandemic was, really made it a big threat to day-to-day life for everyone.
Well, we're certainly living in unique times and interesting times, no doubt. Now, I've got one last question for you as we conclude. Do you think the pandemic will continue as it does appear with this new variant? And what are the likely long-term economic and social impacts that you see here?
Sure. And I have to agree with you wholeheartedly that this pandemic will end up turning into an endemic, like the flu, like HIV, where society and countries will have to live with its effects and its impact, as well as its mutations and the changes as we're seeing now with the heightened awareness and caution with this new you know, this new variant, Omicron. So it's a challenge, and I think economically, to start, we will see continue to see a lot of changes with how people work. You know, perhaps some employers on the onset will allow people to come to the office during the heightened, you know, uncertainty of the pandemic. You know, work employers had to make some adjustments in their structure and how people work. Some people, you know, eventually started working from home full time, or, you know, doing that part time working from home and then going to the office few number of days, sort of like a combo style working habits. But today, and now that we're a little bit more ingrained and employers are a little bit more prepared technologically for this type of work from home environment, I think right now, since we're in this transition period, you know, employers will likely let some employees go back to work and then, you know, start to monitor the situation. And eventually, if the situation does get a little, you know, more severe in terms of the effects of this new Omicron virus, then they might change that strategy and, you know, continue to have people work from home as they did last year. Regards to education, that's still an uncertainty. I think similarly, students will eventually be going to school on the onset now that we're in that interim stage of understanding how to handle the virus. Eventually, if it gets a little bit more deadly, I think, and the transmission is, you know, if Omicron becomes a little bit more prominent in our area, then we might have to eventually start doing work, school education from home again, meaning that, you know, students will have to take classes online and working through that again, as they did last year. It was such a huge transition, but I think, you know, that transition might be a little bit easier this time around. Supply chain issues, I think we have all of these issues where production of goods over in foreign countries and then having to ship them over and then having to have them sit in a barge off the coast of a port, either in California, New Jersey, or wherever that may be. You know, those types of things are starting to change, where you know, people are starting to buy more local and produce more local, and I think that might be a really good thing for small towns, for small cities. Perhaps they might invest more in their local news, their local radio stations, and that would be a great thing. Manufacturing will start to happen more. With made in the local environment, maybe more farmers markets and more buy from your local vendor type of activities. Regarding social effects, I see that, you know, I could see that there will be lots of challenges ahead. For example, with you know, the equity scales in terms of having that equity between minority groups and, you know, vaccines and medication that suits, that not only takes care of one group, but also takes care of all the other groups that are prevalent within our society. Things like work in terms of income equality, we see a lot of that happening right now. I think this pandemic is really exposing a lot of the things that that trouble us within our society. And in that respect, I think having those insights into those problems will help us to eventually try to create solutions for them. And although these solutions and efforts to these solutions may not happen overnight, I think in the long run, we will, you know, move a step closer to trying to work with them. For example, with environmental effects, we know that part of having to wear all of these PPEs and so on, you know, we also have pollution that could be as could result from the disposal of them, and not only pollution, but damage to natural wildlife and habitats. For example, another example would be in terms of the effects of the water runoff. We have a coronavirus. Everyone takes showers. Everyone, you know, and those people who are infected, eventually that virus then gets washed down to our wastewater and treatment plants. And so they have to learn how to treat those issues that come so that we would then have proper and clean, you know, and healthy water to drink. So those are all kinds of things I think that will eventually come up, and obviously we're learning more about them every day. So I hope that we can start to address as a whole and more collectively in the future.
Sabatry, can't thank you enough for what you've done here, all the work invested here in this book, What is Coronavirus? If listeners wanted to get more information on the book as well as Firewater Media Group, where's the best place online to do so?
Well, I appreciate you so much, Eric. Thank you for having me. I really enjoy talking with you. Your listeners can definitely find my book at firewatermediagroup.com, just like it sounds. Fire, F-I-R-E, water, W-A-T-E-R, media, M-E-D-I-A, group, G-R-O-U-P.com. You can also find me on LinkedIn, Twitter at LinkedIn. You can find me by my name, Sabatry Prasad. You can also find me on Twitter at Sab Prasad, as well as Facebook, Firewater Media Group G. And if you can, if you have any questions or would like to see any information or get more information about the book, definitely check out the website. But you know, also on the website, you can definitely send me an information email. There's a contact form right there on the website. Anyone can really send me, shoot me a quick email if you have any questions or would like any more information or would like to get any more information about the book. People can purchase it at anywhere books are sold, like Amazon and Barnes & Noble, even places like Target and Walmart.
And certainly is convenient as well. Again, listeners, for more information, visit firewatermediagroup.com. Sabatry, all the best, and thanks for joining us here today on eHealth Radio.
That's great. Thank you so much, Eric. I really appreciate it and love your show. Thanks for having me, and I wish your listeners all the best.
And thank you for that feedback. That certainly means a lot coming from you, and you have a wonderful holiday season. We've been speaking with Sabatry Prasad, the founder of Firewater Media Group and Green Solutions Magazine. And again, she's the author of her new book, What is Coronavirus? How it infects, how it spreads, and how to stay safe. And for all the details, visit firewatermediagroup.com. And again, this has been your host, Eric Michaels, and we do thank you for your continued support of the eHealth Radio Network. Join us again soon for another episode that will help further expand your knowledge on those things that are important to your health and wellness. For more eHealth Radio reports, we invite you to visit our main radio channel site at eHealthRadioNetwork.com. And as always, we do thank you for tuning in.
Thanks for tuning in to the eHealth Radio Network. For more information or to subscribe to this podcast, visit eHealthRadioNetwork.com.